activity.
The resolution is on Twitter. So I get that. The main thing is to get it in our mind to sort of taking the two tools, Buddhism and Sangha, as reliable guides in our lives, and not just for our own benefit, but generally Bodhisattva, the system that I want to follow the Bodhisattva's path to the same full of life. Sangye chora sati sanama sati 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 The next 3 Wednesdays, we're going to look at birth, life, and death. So nothing left over after a while. But I thought we can use those headings to cover what I consider to be the important aspects of the teaching, which are relevant to us, which we understand, and if we understand, then we will be motivated to want to practice, to learn more, and practice. We're going to do a special meditation at the beginning of each. And this meditation used to be called Sleep Silver Meditation in the old days in the 70s. If you have Catherine McDonald's book, How to Meditate, it's the meditation of inner heat, inner fire. Now, this particular method or meditation, it comes from the Vajrayana level of teaching, the Buddhism, the general teaching is divided into those Theravada teaching for those who can only embrace the concept which we will own the Dharma or so liberation in the view of life, and the Mahayana or the Bodhisattva's path for those who are ready to take on a sense of responsibility for all that is there and to enter the practice to see full enlightenment, full Buddhism, to in order to perfectly qualified to guide us as a chakra. Within the Mahayana, then, what we call the general teachings on the perfections, the perfection vehicle, which are the general truth of teaching. And then on top of that, so including that, there's the Vajra vehicle or the Tantric vehicle for those who are those very few who do have the capacity to meditate on the subtle energy within their body, which is most difficult But when one has clear instruction and one successfully meditates on thorough foundation of renunciation, the practice in the world of practice of the Bodhisattva, the altruist sagacity, guide all things like practice, and the wisdom and strength, the sound of the nature of all things, the yasa, or anything, then one can receive instruction, engage in the basic practice of meditation. So, normally, one would not receive instruction on this particular meditation method until one has a thorough grounding in the preceding general practice. But in the 1970s, when many young people from around the world, mostly from Western countries, were going to Nepal and met Lamas and Kanishi, Lamas and Joseph Rinpoche, the founders of the Tisha Center. Lama Kanishi taught the simplified meditation of the inner peace meditation. And I remember him saying, he says, although normally it would not be thought, but I think it's important for Westerners to gain some experience, some taste of the potential of their mind. In particular, the reality that we can generate through the power of meditation great peace, great bliss and happiness in the mind. Totally independent of external world. So we don't need all of the material objects that we are constantly pursuing. The peace, the bliss, the happiness. It can be achieved in meditation. And ultimately, the useless meditation is the only way to eliminate the disturbing emotions, the deep root of the disturbing emotions. Selfishness, anger, attachment, pride, selfishness, to completely eliminate it from our life. So, Lam Yeshe took the responsibility to teach the monks and nuns who were leading meditations during the early courses of Dogen Monastery in the Dharma Academy. Meditation in the peace, in the class, and then gave the permission to the group who came to the annual 1 month meditation course, which would be up to 250 people who come a whole month. And so began the tradition of meditation and the inner fire. So, during the 3 nights, there would be greater explanation of the subtle relationship of between the body and the mind. But the meditation, I'll just give instruction on what we're going to do and how we have to imagine what's going on in the body. There will be greater detail. But at any stage, if the question you're welcome to ask today. So, I'm sure you probably are all aware that in India and Hinduism and Buddhism, in the Eastern philosophy and religious understanding, there is knowledge of the deep relationship between body and mind. And there's a presentation of something which is unusual for our Western anatomical knowledge, physiological knowledge. There's a presentation of the body as being 3 levels: gross body, subtle body, and various other bodies. gross body is what we see when we look in the mirror, what we feel in touch. It is just the gross organs, the musculoskeletal system, and so on. The subtle body refers more to the intimate relationship between body and mind. And there is the description of to meditate upon various channels, chakras within the body. Now, no anatomist has ever discovered these with a skeleton, and they are said to resist, but to be very subtle. But the way I view it is that they're like a map. A map you use has got the line and the description of where you want to go, and you follow the map and you get to the destination. The description of the channels and chakras are for the meditators to focus upon through the power of their concentration, and by focusing upon the various parts of the body, then they'll gain the experience. So that is the goal. So I'm not worried that I can't discover these channels and chakras through the skeleton, but by meditating upon them, one can reach one's goal and achieve the result. So, at the beginning of the inner deep meditation, we imagine, in our mind, we imagine the central channel, the main channel, which is roughly the diameter of your little finger, and it's transparent, it has a delicate color, so you can imagine the transparent cube of light that begins. And again, this is one reason why I don't get hung up about the exact location, because in different meditations, you visualize the channels at different durations in your meditation. So in this meditation, imagine this tube of transparent light, the upper end goes into the crown, goes down through the brain, and down through the body, just in front of the spine. So when we're meditating, we're trying to get as straight as possible, choose that as well as your source. So it goes down to a point 4 finger widths below the navel. Then, that's the central channel. The two side channels, the right and the left, their upper ends, they're thinner than the central channel. And their upper ends are the bases of the nostrils, and they curve backwards and run alongside the central channel, and they curve, and the three lower ends all join together at that point, 4 finger widths below the navel. So that's the first thing that we meditate on. We establish the three channels. Then we think of the main chakras. Chakra simply means wheel. And from the central channel, there are varying numbers of radiating channels going out, dividing, subdividing, several times, and spreading throughout the entire body. We don't have to visualize that. And these are points of activity, that's called mental activity. So the first one is the navel chakra, which is located at the meeting point of these three channels. The second one is the heart chakra, in the midpoint of the chest, deep inside the central channel. Third, throat chakra, level of the larynx. And then fourth is the crown chakra, which is inside, below the skull, inside the head, around the center. So, in other there's a secret chapter which is the basis of the spine, but we're not going to utilize meditation upon that during this meditation. Now, so the first part of meditation will be to establish the three chakras. Is that clear? Let's think of the points where the chakras are. Don't have to worry about radiating from them. Is that part clear? No. Now, the second part of meditation is we imagine a fire and, well, maybe not using our fingers, but using an instrument to pick up a little tiny red hot coal from the fire. Not big, even a bit smaller than a pea, a bit bigger than a grain of rice. Anyway, a red hot coal. So we can imagine we take this coal and it's placed inside the center channel at that meeting point in the circle. And it hot, and we can feel glowing heat. And it just doesn't fade out, it stays glowing. So that's going to become a real point of concentration. Now, having established the channel, placed this glowing red coal in the center channel of the navel, we begin, we've got to take long, deep, inspiratory breaths in and hold our breath. But just as we're beginning to breathe in, contract the muscles of the pelvic floor. Don't squeeze, but just gently contract the muscles of the pelvic floor. And imagine that all the energy of the lower part of the body can come up towards the navel and they left beneath that glowing amber. Then, so we're breathing, that was the beginning of breathing, and then a long, very deep inspiration through the nostrils. Imagine that all the energy of the air that is inhaled all collect above that hole. So you have the two energy coming up from below and down from above. Above and below that glowing red hole. So at the peak of inspiration, hold your breath and push down with your diaphragm so that you have this squeezing effect. The muscles of the pelvic floor are pushing up, the diaphragm is pushing down. Don't squeeze really hard, be gentle. You squeeze it and you feel that the energy of the air and pulled up from below enters or fans, like fans a coal, and if you blow on the coal and it blows off. So it goes up as you're holding the breath. Then don't sort of go purple in the face and flush it. Then feel ready to exhale, with a gradual exhale, and you imagine that at the same time as you exhale, you relax the diaphragm and you relax the muscles of the pelvic floor. And you think that the air energy, although it goes out the nostrils, imagine it just dissolves up in the center. Still focusing upon the ember, if you can, try to feel that your mind is actually inside that ember. And so it's not that you're looking down from your head or your eyes, but you're the center of your awareness is actually made inside that glowing center. So that's the first phrase. Then I have to explain now, because we will all be at different ranks. We're going to seven ranks, and they're all exactly the same. Inhaling, contracting the muscles of the pelvic floor, the peak of inspiration, hold your breath, push down with the diaphragm, breathe more energy into the pulse, and it grows hotter, even more hot. And you can even feel the heat spreading in the navel. It gets hotter and hotter as you go through the seventh breath. Now the seventh breath, you begin the same way, contract the pelvic floor, push down the peak of the stratum, push down the diaphragm, breathe. And this time, really focusing upon your mind in the core, imagine that the first is flame. And that flame burns away the disturbing energy at the navel chakra. Mainly at the navel chakra. Is the disturbing emotion of jealousy. So, but there are other disturbing emotions as well, but mainly jealousy. So imagine that the ember, the flame, ignites and it burns up completely. All of the darkness and the heaviness, negative karma, so associated with jealousy. Then, really focusing. You imagine the flame rising up towards the heart chakra. And when it reaches the heart chakra, again, there is a burst of flame. That burns away all of the disturbing energy of anger, hatred, dislike. It fills your mind, hope, and anger. Then, slowly, so you're going to have to do this at your own pace, because you all do it at different times. Slowly, that flame rises up the surface level, and when it reaches the throat chakra, it's complete. There's another burst of flame, and all of the negative energy of desire, longing desire, of attachment, is totally burnt, eliminated. And then, slowly, at your own pace, and rises up to the crown chakra, and at the crown there's another burst of flame, and all of the energy of ignorance and wrong views is completely extinguished, burnt away. Now, so you're with me? There's a bit more. You imagine inside the center of Kama is like a crucible, like a cup, and the flame plays around the base of that cup, the crucible, and inside is this silvery white nectar, blissful nectar. And as it is heated by the flame for a while. So you, but just that you stop breathing, you've breathed out. You're not holding your breath all the time. The seventh breath, you breathe out when the ember burst into flame. And you don't pay no attention to breathing. You're watching the flame. So now, when the nectar inside the crucible is really warmed up and hot, you mentally tip it forward, and the nectar starts to flow down. There is an incredibly blissful sensation inside your body. Slowly, a bit like honey flowing down the side of a glass. Not quickly. Slowly, this blissful nectar goes down to the throat. whether it's a preaching or church time, and believe that the greater police is felt spreading out from those buildings. Slowly, it continues down at the heart, even greater things stretch throughout the world. And then slowly going down to the navel chakra, where the necklace produces an amazing, extraordinary bliss that spreads from the navel throughout the whole body. And then you concentrate on the mind being the oneness of this peaceful nature, of this peaceful experience that fills the whole body. So, Lama Yeshe, when he taught this meditation, was saying that this is not something fabricated, but this bliss is a natural physiological phenomenon. And it can be induced in a controlled manner through the power of meditation. And it will give people so much inspiration and determination, not through desire for that, but through recognition of the powers of mind. It will give them the strength to want to meditate and to turn away from everyday life, which is usually 100% involved in running around the outside world, trying to organize the outside world, to a happiness which does not approach the natural bliss that is generated through the power of meditation. Right? Now, that's the way it's described. And obviously, even to gain any sort of experience, it could take a long time. But at least for the next 3 Wednesdays, we're going to do meditation, and then you can do it at home. As well as get the book, How to Meditate, by Catherine Bell, one of the first books that our organization ever published. Not these days, but one of the first. You can read out more about it. So, this in as comfortable position as you can, right hand resting in your left hand, thumbs together, elbows loose. Just begin by focusing upon the coming and going of your breath for a moment. Imagine the second child in flexible tube of transparent light. Its upper end at the crown, top of the head. Imagine it going down to your body just in front of the spine. At that point, 4 fingers below the navel. I'll mention the two side channels, the right and left channels, the upper end, beginning at the base of the nostrils, curving backwards, and running down alongside the central part for 3 meters together at the point below the body. Imagine that from a fire in front of you, you take a small, shining red hot ember and place it inside the central point, the meeting point of the three channels. Feel the heat. Focus on that red hot ember. Then begin the first of the 7 breaths by, as you start to breathe in, long, deep breath, slowly. You contract the pelvic floor muscles, pull the energy out from below. They gather underneath the ender. And as you continue to breathe in, the air goes down the side channel and gathers above the ender. At the peak of inspiration, hold your breath. Slightly squeeze the ender by pushing down the diaphragm before it becomes too uncomfortable. Relax the muscles and breathe out. So we continue in 7 breaths. The ender getting hotter and hotter. And during the 3rd breath, the voice of the flame slowly rises up to surface. Burning away the aspirations of the cabinet, meeting the nectar and sitting with the serving nest. Take your time, don't rush it. extended, you know, this increasing visibility of shackles. I have made it this place back to the body. I just want to remind the aspect of faithfulness. Relax, just take a meditation. So the meditation, the inner heat meditation, very quick, and if you become familiar with it, you become accustomed to it, it's better than any other method to want to relax your mind. Because your mind is, if it's disturbed, it will be a certain emotion, pride, and you consume that. As you burn it up, you see your mind being perfectly free of whatever is taking you agitated. Then, the blissful meditation. It's a very profound meditation, there's a lot to it, of course. But you can do it. So, we had permission from Lama Krishnamurti to meditate upon it. Normally, it wouldn't be taught. I was good at having a great deal of that was useful. One thing I did mention, Lama advised that at the peak of this meditation, it might help to swallow a bit of saliva, that downward swallowing that helps the pressure down. But that's not necessary. I find that I can't regenerate much and I can swallow a bit of wind when you want to work, but I can't destroy it myself. Any questions on that? Yeah. when you're contracting the muscles, it's up and below, you're trying to swing it to make it. But when you relax, say, at the seventh breath, and you imagine the first flame, then you focus on the rising flame. So it's like a thin spiral, very thin flame, and igniting it. Building energy that each back and then staying in the bottom. Yeah. Oh, and then you follow the next one. Okay, now, so birth, I guess the first night is that birth. And I began talking about the body of being gross, subtle, and very subtle. The gross body is the anatomical body that we know. Subtle body refers to the channels and chakras, and also lining the interior channel. There is a, it's called bindu, Sanskrit bindu, which translated means drop. And imagine if you have a glass of very cold drink, then on the outside of the glass you get droplets of condensation. So on the interior, the inner wall of the second chamber, there is this drop energy, red and white, and it is like that. Imagine little droplets throughout the length, but mostly at the chakra. And there is red drop energy, which was initially received from the mother, within the mother's ovum, and white drop energy, initially received from the father, in the sperm, the fertilizer, the ovum that became us. So, mainly the white drop energy is concentrated at the crown chakra, and the red drop at the navel. And in fact, what we're visualizing the crucible with the nectar, that actually represents the white drop energy going down. So wherever the drop energy moves, the natural experience of living is moving. So that is the subtle body, the combination of the channel and the drop. The most subtle body is the Sanskrit prana, Tibetan lu, and it's both translated wind. Wind or qi is Chinese. Same thing, wind. So this is subtle form, you know, it's material. It's not gross like the atoms and the molecules that make up our gross body, but it's physical, but very subtle. The scientists shouldn't have any problem with this. They say that 80% of the universe is unrecognizable, unknowable, dark matter. Right. So they shouldn't object to the Buddhists talking about this subtle, very subtle physical matter. What it is, I don't know. But this wind energy is associated with consciousness, with mind. And in fact, the mind and the wind energy are one entity. It has two functions. It has a function of movement, which we label wind. It has a function of awareness, which we label mind. So in other words, mind is inseparable from the wind. They're not the same thing, there is one entity that has the two functions, the wind and mind as a label given to this entity that flows within the channel. So wind energy is a very subtle body, and it has also growth, medium, and subtle aspects of the wind energy. Whenever our mind is aware, when our senses are operating, when we're perceiving things with our eyes, hearing things with our ears, smelling, tasting, and touching, whenever the five senses are manifesting, there is associated coarse wind energy with that mental experience. And whenever our mental consciousness, our sixth sense, you know, the realm of our thoughts and our emotions, our constructive emotions, our destructive emotions, manifesting, there is this coarse wind energy associated with those mental activities. So that's gross mind. Gross mind refers to the experience that we have when our senses are functioning and when we're thinking and emoting in a constructive or destructive way. So that's gross mind. Then subtle mind, that only manifests during the death process. It can be made manifest through the power of meditation, but that comes later. Naturally, subtle mind manifests during the death process. So we'll go into that in more detail the last time. But as we're dying, the wind energy gather all of those channels that have branched throughout the body. Death process causes them to contract towards the central channel, and then they start to flow down from the crown towards the heart channel. So I said the white top energy is mostly concentrated in the crown chakra. So as the wind energies flow down, they carry the white top energy down, and you get the subtle mental experience of what's called the white vision. So that white vision is subtle mind, and the wind associated with that. Now the wind has become much, much, much more refined. All the coarse winds have stopped. You're not thinking, you're not experiencing the sense. They've all shut down. Actually, this also happens during sleep, going to sleep, that's very quick. Anyway, white vision, then the winds from the lower part of the body come in, light up the central channel, carrying the red drop energy from the navel towards the heart. Red vision. That's also subtle mind, and that's subtle wind. Then they all gather together at the heart, and you get black vision, the subtle mind, the subtle wind. And the final vision of death is the most subtle wind and the most subtle mind, called the clear light vision. So that's the... We've stopped breathing a long time. Some time before, but we're not dead yet. We're in the clear light vision. That's the most subtle wind and the most subtle. We'll talk more about that during the death process. I'm just presenting the body and mind, a human being as body and mind. And that's all we are. Gross, subtle, and very subtle bodies. Gross, subtle, a very subtle mind, and the two function together, and that's what a human being consists of. There is no other entity which constitutes a human. There is no third thing which is the person or the soul or whatever you want to say, spirit, doesn't exist. Anatman, Sanskrit belief at the time of Buddha was that there is a soul, which is Atman. But the main thing that distinguished Buddha's teaching from the sound of teaching in India, Anatman, no Atman, no soul. There is just body and mind. Now, there are persons. Of course there are persons. But the belief in India at the time was that the soul or the person or the Atman was an individual who existed in his or her own right, like independent of everything else, but something which we seek to find the Atman, the true real self. Buddha's huge revelation at the time was that that is a figment of our imagination. And that belief is actually not the intellectual belief, but an innate sense of the true real me, which is in every newborn baby's mind, because it was there when they died from the previous mind. Will that be innate sense of me? A true real me is somewhere vaguely connected with his body and mind, but not the same. The one and only me. That is a mistaken idea we have to do. And because we become infatuated with our belief in self and our self-image, then we become attached, pleasure, aversion to pain, and the whole gamut of disturbing emotions arising from mistaken belief in true, real me here, who's experiencing, who's been talked to, spoken about, and here. Nothing can energize us more than to hear our name come up in a conversation between a couple of other people. What are they saying about me? You know, the good words, they're happy. The bad words, they're angry. I am not like that. So that's our problem. The Buddha said, this is our problem. However, the most I mentioned the clear light mind, the most subtle mind, and the clear light wind, which is associated with that most subtle mind, right at the point of death. That is what separates from the body at death. That's the death, the defining kind of death, the separation of this most subtle wind and mind from the center channel. And it carries with it all the three dispositions, all the qualities of that life, all of our good qualities, our bad qualities, the good qualities, whatever degree of love, passion, intelligence, knowledge, all of our memories, and our bad qualities, our selfishness, our anger, our capture, our fight, and the seeds of those emotions are born on that clear light mind. As on top of that, we also get that mind bears all of the karmic imprints or potencies established by past actions. Not only the previously past acts, but karmic seeds or potencies from lifetimes, billions of lifetimes ago, which have yet to ripen. So they're born. And that most subtle, clear light wind and clear light mind, that is what is drives in the intermediate state, the state between death and rebirth. Probably probably better to explain this in more detail in the last point, but the intermediate state is like a dream body. You know, like in dreams, does it have a body? Actually, there are two, I have two types of dreams. One in which I'm experiencing, like I'm in the body, it's not necessarily my waking body, we're experiencing the events of the dream. And another type of dream is where I'm the narrator. I'm actually telling the story of the dream. It's quite interesting. I've observed that. And I recently read a book, Harari, Homo Deus. It's an interesting book. And this guy, he talks about a lot of things, but he says we do have these two psychological, even in our waking time, where the narrator, or where the actual, what is called the experiencer, or the narrator. So that's interesting, because I had observed that in my dream. So we're talking about the bardo body. It's like, it's a bit like being the experiencer in a dream, where you have a physical body, and the body will be the shape of the rebirth that you're going to take. And that rebirth was determined by the karma inscribed as you were dying. So as you were dying in the past life, you ripened karma to be born human. The intermediate state body would be like a human. That's at the size of a six-year-old child. It was an animal, it would be in the shape of that particular animal. It would be a jiva, a divine being, it would be in the shape of the body of a jiva. It would be a hungry ghost or a hell being, it would be in the aspect of the body of a hungry ghost or a hell being. So that's determined by the karma. So now it's not said, but during this intermediate phase between one life and another, many different, like in a dream, your dreams can stick from one scene to another scene quite rapidly and quite unusually. This happens in this bardo, this intermediate state as well. And eventually, your karma will attract you to the situation for your future parents, whether your human parents, or jiva parents, or animal parents, are going to conceive a baby. So your mind will be attracted to that situation. If it's human, one scripture is that first of all, our gender is also determined by the ripening karma. So when we were dying, whether we were going to be male or female, and we're not always the same, we can be male or female, but our gender is determined by the karma that ripened during death, as well as the type of rebirth and the lifespan. So if we have the karmic psychological gender to be male, then it's said that this is just one, this doesn't happen in every situation, but you will have this vision of your future parents in intercourse, and you will feel desire for the future mother, physical desire, and aversion for the future father. The karmic gender was the female. In this intermediate state, you'll see that the future parents populated, and you'll feel this is the desire for the future father, and aversion, animosity towards the future mother. The desire will attract the mind with its subtle wing towards the mother's womb, and the anger will finish and the death of the intermediate state, which means your mind will go down to the clear light again. The most subtle wind will enter the room and it's not specifically said. It will enter the egg either prior to fertilization of the sperm or even shortly afterwards, this time that it's mentioned in terms of the meeting of the egg and the sperm. So there are three things for conception, right? Sperm, ovum, mind, spirit, subtle, the feel like mind, feel like you. All right. Now, contained within the sperm and the egg are white drop, and this is how it's described: white drop energy and red drop energy. Red drop from the mother, white drop from the father. As well as the chromosomes coming together, the two steps, 33 making 46. The two drops come together. They form like a capsule, and the most subtle feel-like wind, feel-like mind enters that capsule. That capsule inside the fertilized egg is called the indestructible drop. Indestructible because it will remain undestroyed from that moment of conception until death. That light when it was separated. So we're all set up. So birth is then, it's not 9 months later. This is the time of birth. Now, immediately, so the mind is in both subtle feel like state and supported by the feel like wind. Immediately, due to the lighting of karma, the karma which caused one to take a human rebirth, and as well as the emotions, the mind starts and it becomes more coarse, and the wind becomes more coarse, and so you get reverse. Remember, I said you go from a white vision to a red vision to a black vision to a clear light. Now you get those in reverse. You're in the clear light, so you get the black vision, red vision, white vision, and slowly the developing embryo, the embryo's mind, will slowly become more and more conscious as the embryonic body develops. So what happens? This coarsening wind, carrying the coarsening mind, extrudes through the indestructible drop. And it goes in two directions. The wind going up through the white drop of the capsule carries some white drop energy with it. And goes one direction. The wind going the other direction carries through the red drop energy, carries red drop energy with it. And this is the beginning of the creation of a central channel. Is created with the wind itself. The indestructible drop will be located at the heart chakra. As the channel elongates, we'll go up the coast. The white drop energy will go up to the crown, which will eventually be the crown chakra at the crown. The red drop energy will go down to the navel chakra. According to the Buddhist teaching, this, because our karma was to be human, then the initial egg and the multiplying cell, what will the organizing factor, which organizes this bunch of grapes in your human body, is the growth of the channel system, which is very interesting. When I studied embryology a long time ago, reality may have changed by now. Nobody knew what the organizing factor was that turned a bunch of grapes into a human body. I don't know what it is today. Maybe I know there are theories. There are always theories. But anyway, in the 1970s, when I read the line, I read about this in a year. That's very interesting. That is something that was missing in my medical education. So you get formation at the embryo, and as the organizing energy continues to flow and spread out from the chakras, you get the development of the musculoskeletal system, the organ system, the circulatory system, the respiratory system, the skin, and the sense organs, and gradually the mind of the developing embryo, and then the fetus gradually begins to wake up. And it's said that at about, I think, 20, between 20 and 24 weeks of gestation, the mind becomes very clear. The fetus really awake, and karmically it has awareness of the previous situation, either with two vital things, like before that, where it created the form to be human, which was a very virtuous form. So it has that awareness of karmic cause and effect with one life and the next life. And it even, it says in the medical text that the fetus feels a sense of melancholy. Sort of like, here we go again. That awareness of the past life and the karma also that created the book can remain even after the fetus is born. In fact, babies are born knowing a lot more than we give them credit for. Because it's not only have they heard things in the womb, but they remember past life. But their nervous system hasn't yet developed to the point where they communicate. And that could take, you know, a year, 18 months, 2 years before they can really talk, see it. And then they've forgotten. Because the new life is just so full on. And there's nothing to reinforce those memories from past life, so it's 50%. There are children who do talk about the past life. There's still stuff that they're doing. So that is a very brief outline of the development of the human after conception. Now, I mentioned that Buddhism refutes an Atman, something which is the same you and me which goes to heaven and meets Brahma or whatever, does this and that. But if we think of the most subtle wind and the, you know, Tilak wind, Tilak mind together going from one life to another, then if we were to call that the soul, I'm happy with that. But as long as we don't think that it's a true, real, inherently existing being, it is changing. It's constantly changing. But mind is always changing. Body is always changing. It's never the same thing. The wrong belief we have is that I am unchanging. I am me. And I am the same me who is here yesterday, the day before, etc. The same me who will be here in the future. We have this idea of a concrete, independent I. And there is, there is no such thing. You search and search and search, and you cannot find anything which be pinpointed to be the person or the soul. But if we wanted to talk about soul being the continuity of mind, I think that's wrong, we are aware that it's not true. Then, so what is the person? With an inherently truly distinct person or soul does not exist at all, but persons do exist. Right? There are so many persons in this room. We are all persons. So, well, how do we exist? Okay, so we were born, our parents hadn't given us a name yet, and they're not even a disciple. There's a new baby. But the baby hasn't got a name. It might be called Baby Walker or Baby Jones or whatever. But it's not Mary or Bill or Tom or Harry. It doesn't have a name. Harry Jones does not exist. He was a baby. He was a Jones baby. And that baby will be given the name Harry. But Harry Jones does not exist until the parents decide what we will call him. Let's call him Harry. At that moment, the parents decide to call their baby Harry. Harry comes into existence. Harry Jones begins to exist, independent from the name. So that means that Harry Jones is just a mere convention. You know, as soon as all the friends and relatives hear that the baby's been born, oh, what is it, boy or girl? Boy. Oh, what's its name? First, Harry. Ah, oh, Harry Jones. Okay. Harry Jones. Immediately, they will misconceive Harry Jones to be more than just the label. There is something inside that baby, which is Harry. And the more they get to know Harry as Harry grows up, the more and more they convince it's a true, real, independent Harry abiding within that body and mind. They identify Harry through the face, they know the face, they know the sound of the voice. Oh, that's Harry. But what they conceive of is a Harry, not the sound of the voice, not the shape of the face, but the true, real Harry that's inside that body. That is wrong. There is no such thing. You cannot find true real Harry. So Harry is just conventional. Conventionally exists, it depends upon the name. So, no person is the same from moment to moment, but still conventionally, it is acceptable to say that, well, yesterday I did this, last year I did that, and the year before that I did that. That's still conventionally correct. We're talking about a newly labeled parent. And we can even extend it further. Talk about my previous life and my life before that and my life before that. But it's not the same me who's in those lives. They're different. We've got a different name. So Harry Jones began to exist when the parents gave the name to the new baby. Harry Jones will cease to exist at death of this life. There will be no more Harry Jones. However, the mind is part of the label. Harry Jones continues. And all the qualities of Harry Jones' mind, all the good ones or the bad ones, are not lost. They are born on the ever-changing sea light wind, come into karma, or enter another body. And that most likely won't be called Harry Jones. going to do too much. And if you are the man, it might be called stop. It might be a jolt. Any man. Okay. So that's birth. Any discussion? Sex? Yeah. Well, good, but also it would be good too, because you might be a scribe, and not be a spot in the future life. It's up to us. Our karma is up to us. We potentially have total control over karma, such that we can cleanse, purify all negative karma, and stop creating any negative karma. We only create positive actions in there. Why don't we do it? Because we don't really believe that our belief that happiness comes from my partner, my job, my house, my family, the weather, etc. We so strongly and we invest all of our energy into that. And Christians define the family, presence, strength, etc. We don't realize that we are just cementing our existence in the world of God by believing that real happiness comes from presence and gatherings of family and success. I mean, a lot of people who are at the Christian party would dread, oh, we can't invite Auntie so-and-so, she was terrible last year. And we but still we have an underlying belief, no, there's true real happiness somehow. It doesn't mean we shouldn't have parties, we shouldn't have parties. But we've got to understand that the real cause of happiness is internal. Like Lama Yeshe taught, the inner heat meditation. You can get so much peace and bliss from meditation and the inner power. More than you could ever get from any external situation. And it's there. It is a natural physiological phenomenon. It's not dependent upon the money in the bank, or your job, or whether your partner has abandoned you, or your partner has died, or whatever. You can still experience great peace for everybody. There's no intellectual rejoice, but we're overwhelmed by the habit that results in that anger. So be good to remember the inner spot, and they'll be inspired. Because it's up to us. Buddha can't take us by the hand and lift us out to real life. There is just how to do it. How to do it depends on prior causes. Yeah. 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 Practices to what? To past lives. Oh, sure. Yeah, through power of meditation, one can gain further and further awareness of sacrifice of Christ. And so all our past sacrifices, the memory is in the mind, it's not in the brain. We need a functioning brain to manifest our memory, but memory itself is a psychological phenomenon. Yes, there are. It becomes natural as your accumulation of positive energy and power of concentration increases. And it's certainly, with further and further inspiration to reach the end. But, of course, to do that depends on past connections. But to bring those past connections in regard to the Dharma and the meditation, etc., to bring to fruition, that depends upon a living, inspiring guru, a teacher in this life, who will sort of bring it all together. But still say it's up to you, but with kindness, will be there to show us the way and to help us own the way. I think they want to do that, we will. That's why my main teaching love of cooking here was his kindness in teaching his inner heat meditation, which he really shouldn't have according to his teaching. Because there's danger as well. There's danger as well because of the set of the inner bliss. And just do it for the bliss. And not do it to really burn up the affliction to the fire. And to go further. So the great danger that when you go astray, that loving issue and his wisdom. He was willing, because the fault will end on him, he fought it. So he will bear the fault, but he will have it. Because he was a great person. So he was a wise and a courageous and compassionate teacher. Okay. So what is the purpose? It's clear light mind. Well, a Buddhist mind, which is the end point of spiritual path, is always in the clear light. And that clear light has a potential to perceive phenomena, or sensory, but it's still clear light. So it is said in many of the Catholic texts that the clear light mind is a Buddhist nature. We have the potential to feel light. So when we die and the mind comes to feel light, it's not a Buddha mind, because it's all the seeds of our disturbing emotions, it's all the karmic interests. So it is feel light, and it is the final goal that we want to actualize. By freeing it from karma, freeing it from the disturbing emotions, and accumulated in it the vast, we call the two vast collections of the spiritual power, the collection of merit, which is applied to compassion, working for others, and the collection of wisdom acquired through meditating on reality. So the clear light mind of the Buddha has that connected and which is unified. And so the such a mind Buddhists can manifest in any form, as a dog, or as a bird, or as a teacher. So my mundane mind can't tell, but my initial mind may go to a Buddhist mind. And it's good to train our train in the past to see the teacher as being a Buddha, as is the practice. And that will just strengthen our courage for our practice. She feel like mine. So you get that. So a teacher has achieved Buddhahood, that is a right step. They have a note, yeah. Exactly. That we, said by the inherently existing Lamyashi, inherently existing Buddha. That's right. That's our mistake. Yeah. And they know that. Everything. In our ordinary mind, everything appears to exist inherently for the same time. Even for our senses. And that's our question, how difficult it is to get out of that. It's the wrong appearance. And we just automatically grasp what that appears to be true. And it's very subtle. It's not a philosophical concept that can be understood. Oh, okay, it'll never happen again. It's much more subtle. And that's what we have to recognize. And that's our job, to recognize how we're mistaken, perceive the world. And whenever our mind is upset, that is clear evidence that we are seeing a situation wrongly. And so instead of allowing our resentment, anger, or desire to dominate, we say, hang on mind, talk to our mind. What are you doing? What do you see in that person? Why do you see that person as the most beautiful, desirable person in the universe? How many times have you thought that in the past about others and they let you down? So we start and with anger, that person is totally bad, awful, the worst person. We say to our mind, you're upset because there is some element of error on your side. Sure, the person who's hurt us, of course, till we're angry, has done something negative. But if we did not see that person in their existence, we could not get angry at that person. Anger never solves the problem, it only makes it worse. So, even intellectually, without truly understanding it, we can diffuse the energy of attachment and pride and jealousy. our life to be done. So I said, especially when we're meditating, that's the spiritual path. Become more and more at peace and happy and unflustered by adversity. If you deal with adversity, you really come in a skillful way. Okay, well, so we've set the pattern. Now next week we will do the Benahita again, and I hope if you can remember it all, we'll get Catherine Nicole's book, How to Meditate, and try it during the week, and then it really can be here experience, and the next week is about life, so maybe it will be about more details to come. And you know, how we can do it, and then the final one will be more detailed about death processes. So. Okay, so thanks so much. Then the positive energy that we've created tonight by discussing the Dharma, then we should dedicate that to all others by being with through the energy that I've expended coming here and listening and thinking about the discussion of the Dharma, may I train my mind towards its full potential for Buddhahood, so that I can always be there to guide others when they ask, when they cry out for help.